You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into ESPN FC alongside Shaka Hislop. I'm Sebastian Salazar. Lots to get to in this show. Shaka, we got a full preview of the FA Cup semifinals this weekend at Wembley. But let's start in the Premier League. Just the one match on Friday between Everton and Spurs. Everton coming in eighth, Spurs seventh. Just 1 point between them and nothing between them. And this one, match finishes 2-2. Harry Kane with a brace, though he did appear to pick up an injury late in the match. Gylfi Sigurdsson with a brace for Everton. As far as what it means for the table, not really sure who the draw helps. Spurs still 5 points out of the top four. Everton 6 points out of the top four. More, we welcome in Craig Burley and Ian Dark. Craig, who will be more disappointed with the fact they didn't get the 3 points today?
I think the bits I saw of the game, which was most of it, I would say Everton, because they created, more clear-cut chances. But at the end of the day, it's powder puff material, these two thinking about top four, because from the Premier League's perspective, if these two were to make it, they would be an embarrassment, because they're absolutely bang average, the both of them. The goals covered the mediocrity. The first 30 minutes was abysmal. So, they can be disappointed all they want, but clearly they're not good enough to be in the top four. They won't be in the top four. And English football can be thankful that won't happen. Because, as I said, these two just couldn't cut the mustard with the big elite teams in Europe.
Ian, disappointment all around. The draw doesn't really help anyone, does it?
Not really, no. They wanted a win to close in on the top four. But I agree with Craig. These two teams don't look good enough to be thinking of the Champions League next season. Of course, Everton would be doing cartwheels if they could just get into the Europa League. Whereas for Tottenham, that would be a disappointment. And I think the big story going forward from the game is Harry Kane, because he's shaking his head, he's going off injured, and they've got the League Cup final against Manchester City coming up next week. And Kane had the look of a man who thought, I'm probably not going to be ready for that. That would be an absolutely massive blow for Tottenham. They need that trophy. Mourinho needs that trophy. He looks like he's on borrowed time, and it looks like they might be playing that game without Harry Kane, although we await some kind of official word on his condition.
Shock on today's match. I mean, Spurs need Harry Kane. If not for the Everton errors, the kind of hand Kane those chances, his ability to convert them, they get nothing from this match.
Yeah, well, without question. Listen, Harry Kane is one of the best strikers in world football, and you take him out of any starting 11, of course, that team is a whole lot less. And for all Spurs' struggles, Harry Kane's numbers continue to amaze. It speaks to how important he is to them. It speaks how important he is to the England national team. So wherever his future, whatever that may hold. But just looking at this game, and we're talking about one of the best strikers in world football playing against a team that Craig rightly describes as, or playing with and against teams that Craig rightly describes as bang average. If you, and this has been the question over the last few weeks, if you're Harry Kane, what keeps you at Spurs? Maybe it's silverware, and now we'll have to wait to see how that injury affects his appearance in the cup final. But is that the kind of silverware that Harry Kane is kind of hinging his future on? Spurs aren't getting into the Champions League at this point. Even Europa League just feels like a little bit of an insult to how good that team is, and to Harry Kane himself. So what's the what's the silver lining here for Harry Kane and Tottenham Hotspur?
Yeah, Harry Kane now is 100. Go ahead, Craig.
No, what's Harry Kane's desire? I mean, have some stomach, man. You know what I mean? Come out, I mean, stay at Tottenham and do what? Be the top man in that team and do absolutely diddly squat? I mean, have some stomach and come out and say, look, I got to move on from this mediocrity because, my career's, I'm at my peak now. And I can go and play for probably most of the top teams in Europe, be challenging for all the top trophies in Europe. And so, I mean, how long is this going to comfortable relationship going to continue? I know you've got agents and all that working behind the scenes and all that sort of nonsense, but, you know, I just think Harry Kane's got to come out and just say, listen, enough's enough. You know what I mean? We don't spend money. We've got a manager who has not convinced anybody that he's not yesterday's man, and that's been the case for a few years now. And his career's going to peter out at a good club, but not a great club. So, you know, I mean, come on. If you want to really make the most of your career, just come out and say it and be done with it. Try and move on and go and play for a club that actually challenges at elite-level competition.
Ian, you agree with
I think
with
he's
Craig?
Too good a bloke, you know. I think he's too good a bloke to do that. He's a club man. He's the captain and the leader. He knows that. I think he's going to wait till the summer. But some of the things, I think, just reading between the lines, I think push has come to shove with this situation. He's 28 now. He needs that move. And another little factor, I think, in this is that the Tottenham fans now would not begrudge him going. And he's given the best years of his career to Tottenham. And now is the time for him to make that move. So maybe we will see some movement on this, I think, this summer.
Craig mentioned Kane's manager is yesterday's man. Well, he was in the news, Paul Pogba, with some interesting comments about Jose Mourinho. Here's what he had to say. What I have now with Ole is different. He wouldn't go against the players. Maybe Ole wouldn't pick them, but it's not like he puts them on the side like they don't exist anymore. That's the difference between Mourinho and Ole. Craig, Shaka, not just a shot at Mourinho here, but also a compliment for Ole, which I'm sure will make Mourinho more incensed.
Well, probably, especially given their recent exchange of words. But in all honesty, what Paul Pogba is saying here is not news. I don't think it moves the needle in any regard. We knew that Mourinho and Paul Pogba had that falling out before Mourinho left Manchester United. It's no real surprise to see an ex-manager having ex-player having a shot at his former manager in the way that Paul Pogba has done, in all honesty. And everything that Paul Pogba is seeing in this piece, we've seen. Mm. We've spoken about how we continue to throw players under the bus. It wasn't at Manchester United that started. I think it started sometime earlier, probably even at Real Madrid. His relationship with Chelsea Football Club and their fans maybe allowed him to get away with it a bit more. And then you see how it unraveled at Manchester United. We've known that. And so for me, this is nothing new and not at all surprising.
Craig, this is a manager that used to get the most out of his players, yet these quotes would suggest that he's totally lost that touch.
Well, first and foremost, I didn't say he's yesterday's man, by the way. So I said he is yet to convince a lot of people that he's not yesterday's man. So, you. Which is slightly different. No, I mean, No, I'm correcting you. You don't.
Yeah. I'm thanking you for correcting.
But listen. Well, here's the deal, right? One, he was always working with better players than he has been recently, right? He's been working with good players, but generally he's worked with great players. But his modus operandi has always been, and you could talk to people at Chelsea about this and maybe Inter Milan and others and Real Madrid. He's always jettisoned people at times, always. Now, when you're winning and being successful and being seen as the top manager of your generation at that time, you can get away with it. When you're not getting results and you are struggling, like he was at United for periods and he is at Tottenham, it's going to be flagged. But he's always, you know, put people to the side that were not on the Jose Mourinho bus. It's just that he was having more success before, so those headlines were not there. So nothing really, and as Shaka said, it hasn't really changed. As for Paul Pogba, you know, Paul Pogba goes whatever way the wind's blowing. Let's be frank about that. You know, Paul Pogba, wasn't it just 4 months ago, Paul Pogba's agent, Mina Raiola, was talking about how unhappy he was. Now, is this just Mina Raiola talking? Or does Pogba and Raiola as a partnership never discuss his feelings? So Paul Pogba's not always been happy, even with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. He goes and blows whatever way the wind is going, right? And correct me if I'm wrong, this Solskjaer arm around, different type of manager, this, that, and the next thing. Do you know what management's about? Mm. It's about winning. And what you can't criticise Mourinho for over the years, he's won a bucket load of trophies at elite level football. What has Solskjaer won?
Ian. Nothing. Ian, on the Pogba front, do you think this is a sign that all things are good at Manchester United and all that talk from Mino Raiola was just smoke and not fire? You think Pogba might stay now?
Well, he seems in a good place at the moment. You wouldn't put it any stronger than that. Craig's right. He blows hot and cold. One moment he's saying that, or his agent saying Manchester United's not the future for the player. Just at the moment, he's performing pretty well. He rescued them in the Europa League game against Milan. He was very good in that win at Tottenham the other day. But probably he's the last person to be doing lectures about happy camps and so on. But, Shaka's right. He used to be, didn't he, Mourinho? It was a tight ship at Chelsea when he first arrived. And he amused the press with the special one quotes, and he was delivering trophies. Now he's not. And, you had that quote, didn't you, the other day? Said it all when the reporter asked him, why can't you defend a lead anymore? And he said, same coach, different players. Mm. How do you think the Tottenham players responded when they heard that? So there are murmurings of discontent, unsurprisingly, at Tottenham. Which makes that game next week, that League Cup final, a massive game for Mourinho. If he can pull that off and beat City, maybe people will think, maybe he still has got it. He can pull it off and get us a great result over 90 minutes. But I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, Ian, if they don't get that trophy, those murmurings of discontent, you think they'll lead to a sacking?
I think it might only be a matter of time. I think the feeling among the Tottenham fans that I speak to and you see on social media, not that we should always take that really as the guide, but I think they're kind of fed up with him and there's a feeling of, well, if he goes, how much compensation do they have to pay as a club? Maybe if he doesn't deliver, it could be as little as £20 million. That's quite a lot. He hasn't been there that long. So I think the writing's on the wall for him. I do.
All right, thank you very much, guys. Here's a look at the upcoming Premier League schedule. Of course, I cut into a little bit on the weekend with the FA Cup. Got a couple games Saturday and Sunday, both Arsenal and Manchester United in action on Sunday. Monday, Leeds against Liverpool. And then on Tuesday, Chelsea host Brighton.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Chelsea and Manchester City meeting at Wembley on Saturday in the FA Cup semi-finals. As you can see, Manchester City installed as pretty heavy favourites to advance to the final and keep hopes of a quadruple alive. Craig and Ian still with us. Craig, as we look at those odds, Chelsea pretty heavy underdogs. Should they be that heavy underdogs considering how well they've played under Thomas Tuchel?
Yeah, I think so, because City on their day, if they get all facets of the game correct, well, you know, definitely beat any team in the Premier League. I mean, we can argue about PSG and one or two others in Europe. But if all their facets are firing, then yes, they are. And they've proven that in the Premier League up until this point. I mean, it's getting so boring for them now, and they're actually switching off a little bit. But the interesting thing is, you know, Tuchel's been steadfast in this three at the back, and it's been, for the most part, hugely successful defensively. There's been a couple of wobbles. But interestingly enough, and as we saw in midweek again in quite a few big games, City deploy a false, if we want to call it a false number, nice, effectively not a striker. And that's a system that has worked for them without Jesus and Aguero. So how does that leave the three centre-backs? You know, if effectively they haven't got a striker up there, that means it's going to be a heavy overload for the guys in the middle of the park of Chelsea. So it's going to be... I don't think Thomas Tuchel will change the way he's played, but I'm just intrigued in how that the three centre-backs, unless they're holding each other's hands for most part of the game, are going to be able to handle that movement of not having a potentially natural striker if City go that way. So lots of little intrigue between both teams. But of course, Chelsea, as you rightly said, Sebi, are in a much better place than they were a few months ago and are a much bigger threat, I would say, than they are, say, 2 or 3 months ago, or they were.
Shaka, interesting matchup between the two managers here. You got Pep, you got Tuchel, guys who are known for being progressive but who have been a little bit more pragmatic this season. What kind of game do you think we get? One for the neutrals?
Without question, isn't it? I think any time City step on the park, if City are at their best, regardless of who you support, you enjoy watching Manchester City play football, which is probably why they're such heavy favourites. When they're at their best, there's nobody in English football that comes close, in my opinion. You've seen the pragmatic side, to use your word, Sebi, of Thomas Tuchel. And the question for me is while he was getting, you know, his feet properly under the table at Chelsea, and we kind of saw how he was, he was building around keeping clean sheets and building this real stingy defensive unit, all of a sudden of late, you've seen Chelsea concede. They lost to West Brom, they beat Crystal Palace, and albeit a goal out of nowhere that meant absolutely nothing against Porto, but you've seen that rear guard breached. And I just feel that against City, with the options that they have, whether they play the false nine or one of their out-and-out number nines, I just feel City have too much for them. And I go with the bookies on this. I think City win this.
Ian, you agree with the bookies? Chelsea fair to be big underdogs as they are?
Yeah, they've got one thing going for them, I think. It's quite a quick turnaround for Manchester City. That was an emotional night that they had in Dortmund the other night. They passed the test. I think maybe previous editions of City might have lost. Dortmund were that good on the night, that intense. So to pass that test was something else, I think, for Manchester City. I'm starting to fancy them for the Champions League. But that's quite a quick turnaround to play a game Saturday tea time, UK time. Chelsea have had an extra day to prepare. Having said that, any game Manchester City go into against another English club, they are big favourites to win because they are that good. One of their classiest displays, maybe a signature display this season, was when they went to Stamford Bridge and completely outplayed Chelsea. That was when Frank Lampard was in charge. So, bit different with Tuchel. I think Chelsea are in a good place. I think it could be quite a tight game, but I do think City will edge it.
Craig, something we've heard a lot of on this show, especially from Steve Nichol, is that Tuchel needs to settle on his front three or front four. In the last couple of games, it seems as he's done that, and it's not including Timo Werner. Is that the right call?
I think at the moment it is. I didn't see the Porto game. The Porto game, we left it to my colleague there, Shaka Hislop. He pulled the short straw because everybody was running for the hills. They didn't want to watch that game, so... I didn't see the performance. Shaq said it wasn't, you know, it was a defensive performance. They sat in to get the result, so we didn't really see that attacking three ball working. We saw it working against Crystal Palace, but for those, and I'm sure Ian saw a bit of that game, Crystal Palace were absolutely woeful. But, you know, the interesting thing is Werner's out of form. Ziyech has had some injury problems, looks a little bit lightweight, came into the side at the start of the season, looked really good, then went back out again. You know, Christian Pulisic himself has had his own injury issues, and that's something that he has to resolve and put some consistency of games together. And then I think we'll see the best of that young man. There's no doubt Mason Mount is and has been one of the first names on the team sheet. He's got so much flexibility, so much desire. He's got goals, work rate, offers everything to a manager, and so he's a shoo-in. But the other side of the coin is you know, lots of people have been scratching their head, pundits and supporters, and I suppose coaches looking at Kai Havertz and his transition from the Bundesliga to the Premier League is just where's his best position, because he did play in several positions for Leverkusen. He was successful playing through the middle for them for a period. And at this moment in time, that position that he's played recently looks more likely that you're going to see a better Kai Havertz potentially in that position than he has been, say, out wide or a little bit deeper. So that's been a bit of a head scratcher, and with the loss of form of one or two others, that's given Tuchel the opportunity to try some different personnel within that formation. And Stevie Nicholl said Havertz has got the ability to knit things together without being a natural front man. He does have the ability to knit things together, and I just don't think we've seen it consistently at Chelsea so far, primarily because he's played all over the place and we're still finding out where his best position long-term is going to be.
Ian, Chelsea are still chasing that first trophy under Thomas Tuchel. Obviously, Manchester City trying to get the quadruple. They're both in the Champions League semi-finals. Who do you suppose needs this more?
they both do, is the short answer to that one. Manchester City, I know Pep keeps saying that the quadruple is impossible. It's not, is it? They're closing in on that. They're winning the big games, and they're favourites to win this big game as well. But Tuchel's only been there 5 minutes, really. They've had a couple of defeats. I mean, he might be encouraged by the fact that City, they've just shown just recently that they can have an off day. They did against Manchester United. They did against Leeds, all right, with a much-changed team. I mean, I think the selection will be interesting. I think City will make more changes again. Will Raheem Sterling play? At the moment, he's out of the picture. He only got 5 minutes the other night, didn't start the first leg against Dortmund. So that's how good they are, that they can change it around and still put a really good team on the pitch. So Manchester City, I think even though they might be a little bit tired and maybe a little even emotionally drained, they can go up, they can come back on, I think, at Wembley and turn it on again.
Let me answer it a different way quickly, Sebi, to Ian, just briefly. Is if Man City don't win the quadruple, and that's a hell of a feat, by the way, but if they don't win it, nobody will bat an eyelid, really. I mean, let's be honest about it. But if he doesn't win the Champions League again, it'll as I said in the show a few days ago, it will give the hacks and all the journalists something to write again, because this is the stigma that continues, rightly or wrongly, to follow him around since his Barcelona days, where he had one of the greatest teams of the last 20 years. And, you know, he's been at two big spending clubs since, Bayern Munich and Manchester City. He's coached more world-class players. They have the artillery to win this competition. But so far at both those clubs, he's failed. So that one will bring the most heat on Guardiola. If they win the quadruple, obviously, then he could probably walk away into the sunset. But if he wins the FA Cup and loses the Champions League, there will be headlines about his inability to once again get a big spending club over the line. And that's not going to go away until he gets that done. So he knows that. And I think at the end of the day, he'd love to win all four, but he needs the Premier League and he definitely needs the Champions League just to get that off his back.
And no doubt, Chelsea-Manchester City, the marquee semi-final on Sunday. It's Leicester City and Southampton. Who do you see going through to the final from that one?
Leicester City. Listen, Southampton have been on an almighty slide, and though cup action might be a welcome distraction to that, I think Leicester City need this result as much as any. Their fans are already concerned about another late season collapse. This is an opportunity for them to put that right and to have that spill over into continuing their league form and finishing in the top four.
Right then, Extra Time today features this trio: Craig, Ian, and Shaka, and Don Hutchison fixing his hair. I think you might see a little bit of that as well. Extra Time, where we take your questions. Always fun.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Leipzig starting the day 5 points back of Bayern Munich atop the Bundesliga. They were facing Hoffenheim. 0-0 late in the match. Yusuf Poulsen gets what looks like a game-winning goal and potentially a goal that would keep Leipzig's faint title hopes alive. Instead, there you can see the flex off his arm and into the net. After a rather quick VAR review, referee disallows the goal. Disappointment and heartbreak for Leipzig as the game finishes 0-0 and they miss out on a chance to close the gap towards Bayern Munich. Shame too, Leipzig had won 4 of their last 5 meetings against Hoffenheim coming in, including 3 straight, but can't get it done when it matters most. Here's what it means for the Bundesliga table. The Leipzig draw leaves them 4 points back of Bayern, but it could be 7 by the end of the weekend when everybody in the Bundesliga will have just 5 games left in the season. For more, we welcome into the show Archie Rintott. Archie, it already felt like RB Leipzig didn't have much margin for error left in the season. How big of a letdown is this performance from Julian Nagelsmann's men?
Huge, because why weren't they taking the game to Hoffenheim in the first half? Where were the runs behind the Hoffenheim defenders, as was pointed out here in the commentary on German telly? I thought that you would have expected a lot more urgency from Leipzig, particularly when Bayern are as tired and have as many injured players as they do now, to put some pressure on them ahead of this game against Wolfsburg. You would at least want to give the impression that you've got something. But if they'd had that goal allowed late on, they would have very much gotten away with one, because that wasn't the performance of a team which you would expect to be challenging in a title race, that they have to be more dominant. And I know that Julian Nagelsmann will be very disappointed with that result.
Archie, let's talk about Julian Nagelsmann. Lothar Matthäus with some very interesting quotes this week. He says that not only is Nagelsmann the first choice for Bayern Munich should Hansi Flick take the Germany job this summer, but also that there's already been contact. I'm wondering what's been the reaction from the Leipzig, Nagelsmann camp, and really across Germany.
So Nagelsmann denied there having been any talks. There is something there. I think that he is the logical choice to take over from Hansi Flick should, as is being increasingly now expected in Germany, should Flick step aside and move to the German national team job. I think that Leipzig are very much keen to say, no, nothing there. They took that stance before on players who, and indeed officials who have gone on to leave them. And Markus Krösche, the sporting director this evening, was saying that, no, there's no release clause for Julian Nagelsmann. We're not interested in selling him. But if Bayern come knocking, Julian Nagelsmann, I think, will be leaving.
You mentioned that Bayern traveled to Wolfsburg on the weekend between the Champions League exit, the coaching rumors, and still no Robert Lewandowski. What kind of shape are Bayern in coming into this match?
I think it's less coming into this game and more hobbling in, such are the amount of injuries that they have. You saw it in the game against PSG, that where you would have expected them to attack with more vigour and be able to put PSG under more pressure, they just didn't have the legs. And we should say that is completely understandable when, if we look up to the Leipzig game, Sebi, that was their 40th game of the season before these PSG Champions League games. Now, usually, I looked it up, you play that amount of games in a season if you're Bayern Munich in 230 days or so. They played that this season in 184 days, I think it was. So if you've got top athletes who are already, when they're at Bayern Munich, at the top of their game and in top shape, if they can't make that, then I think it says something more about the schedule rather than their ability to cope. Because, yeah, they're having to put up with unforeseen and unheard of circumstances. And the fact that they got as close as they did against PSG is commendable. But I think that there is a certain point where even we in the media have to go, they're human, and how much can you expect of them when your body, that much recovery time is being taken away from them?
Bayern Munich, of course, eliminated from the Champions League. Same fate for Borussia Dortmund this past week. They're still 7 points out of the top four, Archie. What's the mood around this club with, you know, just 6 games left in their season? I know they got the German Cup still. There's a chance for some hardware there, but things not going great.
No, exactly. I think the best way to sum up the mood at Dortmund right now is quite somber, because it's out of their hands. They need Eintracht Frankfurt to slip up in spectacular fashion, which there has been a lot of talk about the possibility of that this week, what with it being confirmed that Adi Hütter will be moving to Borussia Mönchengladbach next season, that being confirmed. So whether there'll be a drop-off in their form, I can't see that happening per se. But if there is excitement at Dortmund over the Pokal and the Cup semi-final against Holstein Kiel to come, and a potential final then against Werder Bremen and RB Leipzig, I think that missing out on the Champions League is a much bigger worry for them, particularly financially with what they stand to lose. We've spoken a lot about whether what that will mean for Erling Haaland. I'm not sure even he knows what exactly is going to happen right now. Dortmund are still being very firm, saying that they have the understanding with Mino Raiola and Alfinger Haaland, Erling Haaland's dad, that Haaland won't be leaving this summer, but let's see what happens come the end of the season. I think that Dortmund needs to have a rethink about their transfer strategy, but I'm not sure that will happen with Michel Zorc, the current sporting director, in charge.
Thank you very much, Archie. Plenty more from Archie and the rest of the crew over on the ESPNFC YouTube channel. Lots from the show, plus bonus material like Shaka's power rankings and the always popular Extra Time. And, of course, 8 Bundesliga games on ESPN Plus screens for you this weekend. The action starts Saturday morning, 9:30 a.m. Eastern Time.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Wayne Rooney's Derby County languishing at the bottom of the championship after a 2-1 defeat against Blackburn on Friday, right now above the relegation line. But if you look at the games in hand, a very realistic possibility that Derby County could be headed to League One.
Ooh.
All right, that'll do it for this edition of ESPN FC. Thanks to Archie and Herc for joining us. We got a little matter to settle between you and I. And
do we?
Greg and Ian. Yeah, Extra Time. On the last episode, we found out who was the worst tipper on the show. This time, we're going to find out just how generous the ESPN FC crew is.
Okay.
Yourself included.
Okay.
Extra Time, starting now. Enjoy. Hey there, everybody. Welcome into this Friday edition of ESPN FC's Extra Time. Shaka Hislop, I'm Sebi. We got Craig and Ian on board and a good, good group of questions here. First one, Dan, the orange man asked.
That'll be a change.
And there he is, off in the distance.
Same people tweeting in the same questions every time I come on.
Just for you. Just for you,
yeah,
Greg.
Yeah, absolute guff.
All right, what was the most... This is a good one. What was the most dramatic last-minute goal you ever witnessed in a match that you were playing in, whether you were on the scoring or receiving end? Shaka, you first.
2006 FA Cup Final.
Mm-hmm.
Does that count?
Yeah.
Good Lord. You did that on purpose.
I did not. Ian, you've watched a lot of football in your day. What's the most dramatic last-minute goal you've ever seen?
Well, I'd have to say that USA won against Algeria at the World Cup in 2010. Mm. Um, was
commentating. USA going out of the World Cup, Landon Donovan scores, and suddenly they're top of the group. So that took some beating. And that Abby Wambach won in the USA women's team as well. What was that? Down to 10 women and 122nd minute to stay in the World Cup. So there's a couple.
2011 World Cup. All right, Craig, your memories?
Read me the question again.
The most dramatic last-minute goal you ever witnessed in a match that you were playing in, you could have either been on the scoring or receiving end.
Don't know.
Okay. Ian, does VAR have more negatives than positives as it's ruining the uncertainty of the sport while sometimes missing the most obvious handballs?
Well, the whole handball thing is one of the great mysteries, really. You could write a series about it. They keep on changing what the interpretation of it is, leaving us all totally confused. Like Kevin De Bruyne said, I don't understand the laws anymore. So they've got to go away this summer, I think, and totally rewrite that in with some clarity, because there've just been too many mix-ups and too many big debates.
Is there a league that either guys would have liked to play in that they never did? Chaka?
Ooh. I wouldn't mind playing in Spain for some very strange reason.
What? Weather?
I guess, yeah.
Yeah?
Just, you know, just kind of...
Did you ever have a chance? Was there ever...
No.
No?
No. I went to Spain once.
No, they didn't just sign you off
just,
the street?
I just showed up one summer. That's about it. Just kind of given the reputations of Real Madrid and Barcelona, you know, I'd like to play in Spain for just that reason.
Craig, any league you would have liked to play in that you didn't get to?
Portugal,
why?
Because I used to love going to Algarve on holiday, and the golf down there is great.
Yeah, I figured that had to...
I'm sorry, I meant play football, not play golf, but it's all the same. Which stadiums had the most and least comfortable dugout seats you had the opportunity to sit on in your playing career? I feel like dugout seats are relatively new. It's probably like benches back in the day,
yeah,
right?
It used to be, yeah.
Was there any place that was really uncomfortable or really comfortable?
No, I can't remember that.
Yeah, yeah. You were playing a lot of the time anyway. You were not.
I sat on many a bench. Don't
you
worry about that.
You, Shaka.
All over the world, I've sat on benches.
Craig, who has been the worst signing of the season?
Ooh.
Ooh.
Timo Werner's got to be up there, right?
I need time to think. Ian?
Okay. Yeah. Ian?
Well, you'd have to put up Donny van de Beek, I'd say, at the moment. Yeah, it doesn't look like he's going to fit in, does he, at Manchester United?
Shaka?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And even though van de Beek's done nothing wrong, you know, I think everybody kind of sympathises with the position he's found himself in, but as United's only signing of any significance and has done nothing, he's got a top of chance.
And you kind of see it coming, like a piece they didn't need, right? Go ahead, Craig.
Gareth Bale.
Ooh, yeah,
he'd be in it.
Yeah.
See, that extra time Barclay was worth the wait.
Ripping up too many trees at Arsenal, is he? Not yet.
Huh?
All right, Thomas Partey at Arsenal, 45 million. Not yet.
I'm sorry, Ian, our producer's a huge Arsenal fan. She's very offended. She said he plays excellent in the Europa League. So.
Yeah, that's one game. Been injured most of the time.
Shaka and Craig, what was the most hostile away environment you ever played in? Craig.
I didn't really find these grounds that hostile. I mean, good atmospheres, but I don't know. I suppose I'd say Millwall.
Millwall has such a reputation, huh? Mm. Man.
Yeah, we played an FA Cup game down there, 94, around 95 time, and I believe Mick McCarthy was managing. They were at the new den at this point, not the old den, and there was supporters fighting and on the field before the game had finished, and then the Millwall fans on... And, yeah, the Millwall fans in the replay at Stamford Bridge, when John Spencer missed the final penalty in the shootout that our colleague Casey Keller saved... The Millwall fans were on the pitch again. So, yeah, they have a reputation that sometimes goes before them, but on that occasion, they were in an area they shouldn't have been.
Ian, are things still the same at Millwall?
I haven't been lately. I think that these days the away fans are almost like hermetically sealed. they never meet their home fans. They're brought in by a separate entrance and they go away again. So it's pretty hard for the rival fans to clash. But Casey Keller could tell you a few stories about things at Millwall. I mean, I'm just thinking of commentating at the Azteca when the USA played there and won. And it was only a friendly. And some of the things when they caught our accents and knew we were doing the broadcast for ESPN in the United States, well, one or two things were hurled in our direction. I couldn't tell you exactly what on a family program, but you can guess.
Yeah. Craig always likes to make fun of me because I play both the Mexican and American side. Mm-hmm. When I go to a game at Azteca with my family, I'm wearing green. Okay? There's no red, white, and blue on that.
Makes sense. Makes sense. Oh, God.
Shaka?
Oh, this is easy for me. Costa Rica. Played in Costa Rica, World World Cup qualifier. And the fans all walk with plastic bags, little Ziploc baggies, which they urinated in and threw at the opposing team's goalkeeper. I found out during the game.
Yeah?
That made for an interesting 90 minutes.
I mean, you can't really focus on the game when people are doing that, can you?
No, you can't.
Yeah,
I would. I didn't try to. I was.
How'd the game end? Did it work?
You know,
did
I think we won. I think we won.
Ian,
I'll tell you. Listen, I'll give you hostile, and I think I've told this. I won't tell you the long story because I haven't got enough time, and I don't want to bore you. But and I really want to end this and go upstairs as quick as possible. But I'm just being honest. The St Mirren fans were trying to climb on the gantry to get to me in a Scottish game one day when I was doing the commentary with Derek Ray. You can ask Derek Ray if you ever see him. If Derek Ray ever stops trying to get German citizenship, you can ask him. But I think he's actually camped outside the German consulate somewhere, begging them and offering them all sorts of money to make him a German. So once he stops doing that, you can ask him about this, because he was frightened that day. He was calling for security to come up and protect us, but probably him, from people coming on the gantry and trying to punch my lights out. Just for an opinion. It's only an opinion.
Craig the victor.
Derek can get frightened easily, Craig. I mean, you put him anywhere near a wasp. That's when he's most frightened.
Yeah, but if it's a German wasp, Ian, he's all right. German wasp.
Ian, is there a trade... we may have already touched on this. Ian, is there a trademark phrase that you'd like to be known for? Something stand out from your brilliant broadcasting career? Go, go, USA.
I'm glad you used that word. Now, I can't think of one. I'm not playing hardball here. I don't know.
Yeah.
Trademark phrase. Just try and call it as we see it.
Totally.
No, not off the top of my head. I'll have a think.
Yeah, the good ones don't have trademark phrases, right?
You've got hey there, everybody.
Yeah, I'm not good. Yeah. So, I mean, we pretty much established that. TJ asks, we learned yesterday that Don does not tip. Who among the ESPNFC crew is the best tipper? Craig, what do you think? Who's the best tipper?
Well, I must admit, I always, because I'm very much in the way that they do things here in America, and I never leave a restaurant or a bar without tipping the staff properly. I would imagine, I'm not going to mention names. I don't think it's difficult to work out who the worst tipper.
Yeah.
And they're not in this screen now, but the worst tippers, yeah, I can imagine.
Shaka?
Of our team.
You've been out with the boys a few times, yeah?
Yeah. What's your question? Who's the best or who's the worst?
Who is the best tipper in the ESPN crew?
No, I don't know if I'd say who's best.
Yeah.
I think...
Who's the worst, then?
I think a lot of us are, speaking for myself, I'm just across the board 20%.
Whoa, big timer, okay.
I
gotta get that Shaka contract.
No, I that's for the people who serve you.
Right.
By the way, I'm minimum 20%. I'm the same as Shaq.
I'm across the board 20%.
Look at that.
To Craig's point, I'm not wanting to call any names, but they're not on the screen. There are some who are considerably less than that.
Yeah.
Or either their math is really bad.
Okay.
Maybe we can just put it down to that.
This sounds like an incriminating question from a waiter who's going to hold it against you the next time you go into his restaurant.
That's fine.
No, it's a very different mentality over here, Ian, as you know, to the UK, because I know when UK people come on holiday, they try and tip like 5 or 10% and then you know, get people chasing them out of restaurants. But listen, I'm you know, particularly if we go to a nice place and the service is good, it's 20% minimum. But I do know, never mind tipping people, right? We have, and I've seen this, trust me, we have people that work within the soccer department of this company who never mind don't even tip people. Right? They don't even wait about for the tip. They don't even wait about for the bill. Right? They're gone. Right? It has been known.
Who are they?
A big group of people.
We want names.
No. Has been known for a big group of people that you go like that. Right? There's 10 of us. So that's 10 into whatever it is. Goes that. And then you look around and you go, where's so-and-so? He's already gone.
I'm
telling you.
Shaka, you know what the power move is?
It's a power move.
You go out, for dinner with Craig, you forget your wallet, and then you let him take care of the tip.
Is that, did you pull that power move
that
one time?
The power move.
Or two.
No, I haven't been invited back to dinner since.
Shaka, let me give you the sequence of events here. So before we get to the, Ian, before we get to the forgetting the wallet, so we do the program. I drive him back in my car to my house. I get the Uber from my house to the bar restaurant. I pay for everything all night, including the food, and the Uber back to my house because he's no wallet. And then I get his Uber from my house back to the hotel.
Because my phone had died.
Because his phone had died and he had no cards on him. So it was the full
Ian, you gotta admit, that's pretty good work. That's pretty good work on my end, right?
The least you'd expect is a night out in return, Craig, surely.
I just wish we could have a night out again.
All right, gentlemen, let's...
I'm not that desperate, Shaq.
No. Yeah. Got way better stuff. It's almost golf season around here. All right, that's it for extra time.
He'll end up boring me about that Football America's...
you're next on our guest list, buddy. Thanks for the promo, Football America's. Monday, Thursday on ESPN+.
For you to get me on